Welcome to How My Parents Raised Me. I'm Dawn Chitty. When we are born, we arrive here as pure and perfect souls, and the direction our life takes from that moment is deeply connected to what our parents bring to our lives. And what our parents bring to our lives is deeply connected to what their parents brought to their lives. And that's the cycle of families. I have always craved connection with real and raw stories to understand what makes you you, what makes you the absolutely unique human that you are. Stories are medicine for the soul. They can connect us and they can change the world. And so in this podcast, I'm listening to beautiful souls sharing their story. What happened to them, how they got through, and how they have healed and thrived despite everything to arrive right here in this moment. Content warning, if you are triggered by the themes of this podcast, please seek a helpline in your city. Hello, my beautiful friends. Welcome to this week's episode. When I was approached by Bailey to come on the podcast, I was excited because what she has to share with us this week is so raw and real, because Bailey is only 20 and she is right there in the middle of all the confusion and all of the hurt from what has happened to her within her family. And it's so important we hear this. When Bailey was born, her mum just wasn't there for her. And the grief of just that one piece of the puzzle is enough to change a person's entire life. But then there was more grief and more heartbreak. There was abuse and total abandonment and absolutely no understanding from anyone in her life of why Bailey was becoming more and more out of control. And this is where we need to pay attention, because this is it. This is where we get the chance to break the generational patterns that have been passed down to us and that we are now passing down to our kids. There is not one single kid that is acting out or going off the rails because they feel deep love and connection with the people around them. Not one. They are acting out because they feel unloved, lost, and deeply lonely in their own homes, in their own lives. There's nobody there for them. They have nobody on their side. And all they want is real, unconditional love and care. And when they don't get it, they feel self-loathing and they feel small and insignificant, and they go out looking for someone else to love them. And if that person is not a great person, an abuser, a manipulator, a drug dealer, whatever, that's when it really gets out of control. That's when you can lose them completely. I've seen it happen firsthand. And that 20-year-old daughter or son just a moment ago was that tiny baby you held in your arms. It was the tiny toddler that took her first steps, and you clapped and cheered and you hugged her tight. And now you want to destroy her because she's broken? Because all you see is disrespect or disobedience. But that's your conditioning. It's what you've been taught about how kids behave. The one thing I can say about Bailey is that she is an incredible young woman. She is smart and kind. And I have to say this, way more evolved than any of the adults in her life. She knows her behavior wasn't great, but she is now beginning to understand why. And throughout everything that has happened, all she wanted, all she needed was love, care, and kindness. Maybe this is your story too. Please join me now for Bailey's story.
Bailey, welcome to the podcast. You connected with me because you wanted to share your story, and you're at a point where you're really struggling in your life right now, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. How old are you right now, Bailey?
I'm 20 years old.
20, yeah. And I know that your mum has never been a part of your life. Can you tell us about what was going on with your mum when you were a little baby?
Yes, I can. So from the time my dad met my birth mom, she was a really bad drug addict, and she was also a scammer. And when my dad met her, he thought he could change her. And we quickly found out that's not going to happen. It's just not something that's going to happen. And so when she gave birth to me, she was active on drugs. My dad would find syringes hidden throughout the house, especially in the bathroom. She would sneak out while he was asleep to go meet her dealers. And so after she had me, my dad immediately took the proper actions to get me away from her. She was awarded supervised visits, and she would either not show up, or when she did show up, she was messed up and would just be obnoxious and just remind me. I was 3 months old at the time, and she would scream in my face, "I'm mommy." And I was scared as a baby. I often didn't want to be around her, from what I understand. And then after that, she really vanished from my life, because she was in and out of jail my whole life. Whenever I was 16, my dad and my stepmom gave me a letter from her from jail. She wrote me from jail, and it was on my birthday. And she was pretty much lying to me the whole time in her whole letter, saying how she never did drugs. So that aspect is really difficult, because even when she did try to be in my life, it was nothing but a lie.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just a lot of abandonment right there, isn't it? Where the one person that's supposed to be there to care for us and to love us isn't there right from the very beginning. So there's this big kind of hole, there's this big gap missing for you right from the beginning. And so you grew up just with your dad. And what was your relationship like when you were a little girl with your dad?
Whenever I was a little girl with just my dad, it was great. I mean, I was definitely a daddy's girl. I was always with him, always wanting to be with him. He did work a lot, so that kind of hindered me from being with him, you know, all the time. My grandparents helped raise me, and so did one of his friends. They were a couple. They helped raise me. As time passed, you know, we grew apart, sadly.
Yeah. And so you were living with your dad, and then at some point there were other people living in the house with you?
So they weren't living with me. My dad would pretty much go and drop me off at his friend's house. And if I wasn't there, I was at my grandparents' house, because they lived right down the street. So.
Ah, okay. So you were left with other people. And so the couple that you were left with, can you tell me about them, that couple?
Yes. I would love to. So when he would leave me with them, they were what I knew as my second mom. Well, my first mom, honestly, and my second dad. She was really my mother figure growing up. You know, I really got close with her, because at the time I met her, I was 3 months old, you know, so I quickly attached to her very quickly. And it was getting to the point where I was over there all the time. And she openly told me that, you know, she asked my dad if she could adopt me, because we had such a strong relationship and I was over there all the time. But of course my dad said no. And with her husband, it wasn't the best at all. I of course still loved him, but he was an awful person and did really awful things to me.
Yeah. Can you share any of those things that happened?
So for some reason, I can't remember a lot, and I really still am trying to figure out why. I just have a couple of memories, and one of those is whenever I was over there, I had to sleep on the couch because I didn't have, per se, a room, because they lived in like a barn house. It was really cool. It was like an old barn, but makeshift into a house. And I would sleep on the couch, and he would come out and watch pornography on the living room television while I was in there. And he did that quite often. I do remember that. He would sit at the end of the couch that I was sleeping on and watch that. But one of the particular times that I remember was where he came in and I woke up to my hand in his pants. And I pretended like I was sleeping and I just rolled over because I didn't know what to do. I just opened my eyes and he was right there. It was very confusing for me, not knowing what was going on. That's one of the main times I remember.
Yeah. And how old were you then?
Around 6 or 7. I was in that general area.
Yeah.
Because I can kind of piece it together about certain aspects that were around me to remember what age I was.
Yeah. And that must have been terrifying for you, because you've got these two people who are supposed to be looking after you, who are supposed to be your carers, and this happens, and you probably don't even really understand what is going on. It's just, what do you feel like? You must just feel scared.
So in the moment, I was honestly scared to say anything. That's why I pretend like I was still asleep and I rolled over to escape the situation. And luckily, when I did so, he got up and just went back and sat at the end of the couch. Oftentimes, I think to myself, you know, what if I was unlucky? I'm sorry. It's just really hard.
Yeah, I understand.
And I grew up where I had a really bad problem from the time I was 6, 7, maybe even 5. My dad and my stepmom would whoop me. And they didn't catch the signs of what I was going through. And instead, they punished me for it. So that is also something that I really struggle with, even to this day, trying to understand, you know, like how you can hurt someone who's already hurt. And actually didn't tell anyone until he did it to another little girl whenever I was a freshman in high school. And he had did it to another little girl. And when my dad told me, I broke down crying. And because I immediately started blaming myself, saying if I would have just told someone that maybe it wouldn't have happened to her. And But when her case went to trial, mine didn't make it through because it was so long ago. Yeah. And looking back, I actually did tell someone. I told his wife. I told the woman who I call my mom. I was at his house after they divorced, and I was sitting in the living room, and he just was staring at me while touching himself. This is whenever I was somewhere around junior high age. And I got uncomfortable, and I went to my sister's room and I text my mom. I said, he's touching himself in front of me. I'm really uncomfortable. And she just told me to go to the bathroom and lock myself in it until my sister got home. So my sister came rushing home. And when she came home, I was in her room and he was laying on the bed behind me. And she immediately started yelling at him, telling him to get out, like, what's wrong with you? And he left really quickly. And I don't remember if I ended up staying the night or if my mom came and got me. That part, I cannot remember.
Yeah. So you're just unsafe at all times in this house, because this has been happening since you're a tiny little girl. And even when you've made it clear that this is what's going on, nobody's really doing anything about it, are they?
No. He was a really bad drinker and would often get drunk all the time, and he would abuse my mom. So she would say that she's also scared too.
Yeah.
So I feel like looking back, that was maybe a tactic for me not to be upset at her. In her eyes, if we're both scared, you know, who's going to do something?
Yeah, 100%. And in actual fact, she was the adult and you were the child. So, yeah, it's really hard when the person who's meant to be looking after you in that situation, it's like there's one person that's abusing you in and doing the wrong thing, and then the other person isn't able to stand up and do the right thing either. So it's such an awful, it's such an unsafe, terrifying situation for a little girl to be in, isn't it?
It definitely was, because really, out of all honesty, going to my mom's house was an escape from my dad's house. So no matter how unhappy I was there with what was going on, I would rather be there than at my dad's.
Yeah. And I know that you got on well with your dad, and then at some point he remarried. And
yes.
So you had a stepmother. And can you tell us about what she was like?
So when she first came into the picture, I believe about 4 or 5 in that area. So pretty much as soon as one trauma happened, she came in. And I was acting out really bad. Apparently, I was a really bad kid growing up. Didn't really mind. And her, from the get-go, was what I believe really soured towards me. Especially once she got pregnant by my dad's baby. And so growing up with, once she came in the picture, it was really, I didn't feel safe. I was always walking on eggshells. I was always treated different than my little brother. And there was often really, whenever I would act up, there was often really harsh punishments, in my opinion. I didn't eat a lot as a kid, and she would pretty much make me stay at the table until I finished my whole plate. And when that would make me throw up, she would make me the same amount again and make me eat it again. So for a while, I had a sort of a eating disorder, and where if I didn't finish my plate, I would have a mental breakdown from that. And just growing up, for the rest, it was never feeling heard by her. If there was ever anything going on in my life, I didn't feel safe to tell her, because it would always turn into me getting in trouble. And it got to the point where my dad would stop believing me and believing only her side. And so I just really felt unheard, and I shrank into a really big depression, and I started acting out in ways that would just fix the pain.
Yeah. Oh, so you're a little girl, you have been abandoned by pretty much everybody. You're really in grief because, you know, when we lose a parent, it is grief, you know, so you've really lost your actual mother, even though you've never really known her. You're trying to survive, and then you have a stepmother that comes in and forces you to eat food. And the interesting thing is, when we're in trauma, our nervous system is on high alert. And so it actually causes our digestive system to not work in the way it should. And so the fact that you didn't eat very much, it's probably all connected in with this nervous system response. And so you probably didn't want to eat. I mean, I know I'm the same. If I'm in a stressful situation, my digestion goes out the window. So, you know, you're forced to eat a plate of food, and when you throw up, you're forced to eat it again. I mean, that's just unbelievable to me that's what a parent would do to a child. Just that one thing, right? It's just crazy. It's crazy. And so you said that your behavior that you were displaying, not great behavior, not, you know, you're not doing all the right things, but you're just in this space where you're really out of control internally, right? Everything is wrong in your life right now. So how did that play out, like as you started growing and you're trying to deal with all these different things in your life? What sorts of things were happening for you in the way that you were just interacting within your family?
So growing up, I had a really bad lying problem. I would tell you anything you wanted to hear if I thought it would make you not mad at me. So even if I got a bad grade, I'm not telling you I even got my report card. You know, if I didn't clean something, I'm going to tell you I did. I was really scared of punishment, and that made me act out in a lot of ways of that. They would always find out, of course, you know, they're parents. And when they did, I would get in trouble. And so growing up, I didn't really get to do a lot of things. I really struggled with making friends. And I was really reserved. And when I did meet someone, I would talk too much and get too comfortable too quick. Just because I guess I wanted someone to listen. And then if they found out what I told them, that's a whole nother problem. So growing up, I started getting into sexual activity extremely early.
Stemming from the sexual abuse I was going through, from a really early age, I started touching myself. And my stepmom and dad did notice, and I don't feel like they took proper actions. Instead of taking the proper actions and figuring out what was the root cause of me doing that, they resorted to punishing me. I don't know if it was maybe out of fear or confusion of what I was doing, but oftentimes my stepmother would come into my room at night and smell my hand, and if she thought I did it, she would whoop me. And I really, to this day, don't understand how you can do that. I just feel like all the signs were missed. I really feel like I could have got help sooner than what I did.
I didn't lose my virginity till I was the summer before my junior year. But before that, I was sending pictures, talking to older men, talking to people my age, pretty much anyone that would talk to me, I was messaging and sending inappropriate pictures to and talking inappropriately to. And after I lost my virginity, I went into a downward spiral where I was addicted to not sex, but I was addicted to the high that I would get and not feeling any pain. I would just focus on that, and I was okay for that brief little bit. And then after that, I got really hooked on weed. I was constantly smoking it just to try to forget and escape where I was. And when they caught me sending and talking not dirty to people, they would send the screenshots around my family. And I was forced to read the messages to my father in his face. That was really traumatic for me because that is inappropriate talking. Like, and I'm telling my dad that. It was just really uncomfortable, and I honestly felt like my privacy was being exploited. I had the whole family's eyes on me and seeing my body. Like, I was just extremely uncomfortable, and after that I stopped caring. You know, I just was like, well, they done seen it, now I, you know, why not keep doing it?
Yeah, I 100% understand that. It's when you've been abandoned, you're doing anything whatsoever for connection, right? We all want to connect. We all need to connect. It's a basic human need. And when you have been totally abandoned in this way, this is how you were finding a connection. This is how you were finding somebody to, I mean, it's like you're looking for love, isn't it? You're looking for the love that you never ever received. And I totally hear you. I totally understand that because we're just little kids. We all we crave is love, you know, we're just craving that. And the way we go about getting it often isn't the best way, but it's the only way we figured out. And so, you know, I totally understand that that's where you found yourself. Who was actually making you read this out to your dad? Was it your stepmother?
It was my stepmother. She would, because I was really hardly ever allowed a phone growing up because I was always doing that sort of stuff. So they would take my phone away from me. But of course, me being the rebellious teenager, I would find a way. And whenever they would find out, I was forced to read the messages, and my dad would scroll through the Snapchat and see all my pictures, and they would just tell me how much, well, not my dad, my stepmom would tell me how much of a slut I am and how I'm disgusting. And if I'm being honest, I feel like that made me do it more because I was getting nothing but insults from them. And the guys I was talking to, they never insulted me, you know? So I do feel like that's where I pretty much lived, if in a way. I was only happy when I was talking to someone.
Yeah. And that's what I think a lot of parents don't seem to understand, is that if you're not going to communicate, if you're not going to connect and try and understand and listen and help your own child, they're not going to want to talk to you. Nobody wants to talk to somebody who's being hateful. You know, you're always going to go to whoever it is that's giving you attention, kindness, love. You know, it's not a difficult thing for people to work out, and yet it happens for so many kids. You know, they turn away from their own parents because they're not given any kind of acceptance or love. And I know that your stepmother was also quite physically abusive, wasn't she?
Yes, she was. She would often resort to, I don't even call it spanking, because it was way worse than a spank. It was a beating. And what hurts the most is whenever I would tell someone about this, it was resulted in them saying, like, for instance, her daughters would say, oh, I got it worse than you. When one time I couldn't find my hairbrush because it was too tall above my dresser. I was a little girl and I couldn't see above my dresser, and it was up there on top of my dresser and I just couldn't see it. So she told me to go brush my hair and I couldn't find it. So I told her I can't find my hairbrush. And she picked me up by my ear off the ground and made me grab it and then threw me on the ground.
Wow.
And I mean, numerous other times I can think of. She's yanked me out of the shower while I was naked and confronted me about the pictures I was sending, wherein I had nothing on, a towel in front of my own dad, while she's over here pretty much throwing me around and I'm trying to keep the towel on me. And she didn't let me go get dressed until he told her to let me go get dressed. And it's just a lot of humiliating things that have been done. It wasn't uncommon of her, when she's yelling at me, to grab my face and squeeze it extremely hard. And I feel like that, even to this day, is still affecting me, where if I get in any kind of altercation, I shut down and I immediately start crying because I get scared that someone's going to hurt me or even just belittle me.
Yeah. Did she ever actually try and talk to you?
The only time she, I would say, tried talking to me was when we had a conversation one day after, well, pretty much while she was yelling at me, not even a conversation. She said, is there something fucking wrong with you? Like, are you fucked up in the head, while she was poking me in my head. And she literally said, is there something fucking wrong with you? Do I need to take you to get your head checked out? And at that time was when I was really depressed. And I went into a state where I was like, maybe there is something wrong with me. Like, if I'm making her so unhappy, like, I went into a very suicidal stage. And the only reason why I could never do it was because of my little brother. I couldn't leave him by himself. And that turned me towards running away. I ran away several times. Several times.
Yeah. And when you would run away and come back, would you come back by yourself when you'd run away, or were you brought back?
Every time I was brought back, the only time that I per se came back was when I ran away for about 3 to 4 days, and I ended up going to my mom's house asking her to pick me up. And she can't pick me up, and the cops came and told me I had to come back. At the time, I was 17. And when I got back, my stepmother wasn't there. And she wasn't there for what I believe was about a day, but I slept pretty much for the first 2 days I was back, because for a while I was gone, I didn't hardly sleep. I was really bad on weed, and I just couldn't get relaxed enough to sleep. And I was in almost a paranoia state, to where I was constantly thinking that they found me. And I would rather at that time had been homeless than back there. I just could not. I was so unhappy.
Yeah. And when you run away and the police bring you back, I mean, is anybody offering you any kind of assistance, any kind of counseling? Is there anything offered to help?
So after, I would say this third, second or third time I ran away, they put me in a counseling, to where we were going to try to repair our relationship. And when we went, I thought it was just going to be just me, or maybe just me and my dad, because at that time I didn't want a relationship with her, with my stepmom. I didn't want a relationship. I was done. I was old enough to realize how toxic of a person she was, and I didn't see her changing. So all I wanted was my dad. And she ended up coming to the first session. And during that session, the therapist asked them to tell me three good things about myself. And my dad, he said three, he may have said three or more things. I don't quite remember. But my stepmom, all she could say about me was, I'm a very beautiful young lady. And to me, that hurt really bad, because like you can't think of three things. Like, it was just a slap in the face. And that's what really pushed me over the edge of being done with her. I just felt so disrespected, and I felt like she came for no reason if she's gonna be like that.
Yeah. And so did the counseling continue?
It continued for a couple of sessions, but during it, I want to say during it, I had ran away again. And that time I was gone for like a week. And my oldest brother came and got me from where I was at, because I was sexually assaulted and I was severely beat up. And he came and got me. And I went to what I think is one or two more sessions after that, because my dad let me move out. And I was living with my brother and my mom at the time. And after that, I ended up meeting someone who I'm still with to this day. And he was kind of my saving grace, as I like to think of it. And so I quit going to therapy because he lived pretty far away from where I was doing therapy. I would still like to be in therapy, but it's just not in the cards for me right now. Maybe in the future, but I definitely do think I would still want to do it.
Yeah. So you tried to run away several times. You've had all these suicidal thoughts. You're depressed, and yet the belief around you is still, she's just a bad kid. It's
And
interesting, isn't
that,
it?
yes, it very much is. And what's sad is that that's still the narrative to this day. I don't have a relationship with almost anyone in my family. I only talk to my grandmother and grandfather, and I also talk to my little brother, and that's all. I've reached out to my dad, and it'll go unanswered. I am just really lost at this point on how to move forward, because we were talking for about a 3-month period, maybe more, and it ended in us in an argument because he didn't want to believe how his wife is, and pretty much said that, you know, I didn't grow up in any kind of bad situation, that it's all my fault. And that's how all my siblings feel. I have almost 13 siblings, and they all don't talk to me because of that narrative.
Yeah, and that is a narrative, isn't it? It really is, because we all deal with things in different ways, and, you know, there might have been other kids in the family around and about. Everybody's getting treated differently. Not everybody gets treated the same. Not everybody deals with everything the same, you know, and it's like, well, everybody else is fine. What's wrong with you? And it's a really lonely place to be, isn't it?
It really is. One of the main things that really hurts me is growing up, you know, whenever your parents wake you up for school, you know, it's not supposed to be a good experience, but I feel like I got a really bad experience. When my stepmother would come wake me up, she would oftentimes wake me up by poking me on my forehead repeatedly. And then once I would wake up, she would go into her son's room and get in bed with them and, you know, start playing with them, tell them, get up, my baby. Like, you know, just be really sweet. And that hurt really badly. Or she would just come in and flick on the light and not say a word to me. So it's just things like that, that I feel like people may not see it as something big, but it affected me very big.
Yeah. Well, it is, because you're already filled up with abandonment, grief, you know, anger, like everything is already there. And then on top of that, you know, if you're loved and cherished every day of your life and someone pokes you on the head, well, you're going to go, oh, that's annoying, right? But if you're drowning in just being abandoned and somebody pokes you like that just to wake you up, I mean, it's like the horrible icing on the cake, isn't it? It's like the extra thing that just kind of, you just go, why? Why do I need that on top of everything else? I mean, it's just everybody's experience in a family is so different, and there's no real understanding in any way for what you've been through as an individual human. And that's the hardest part, I think, isn't it? And so if I was to ask you, what's the happiest you've ever felt in your life, what time do you remember?
The happiest that I would say is now. I mean, I don't think there's ever a point in my childhood where I can be like, I was genuinely happy during that time, because there just simply isn't. You know, I did enjoy going to work with my dad. That's something that we did most of the time. And I was the designated gate opener. And I mean, I really did enjoy that time. But, you know, that's maybe 8 hours out of the day that were fun and happy. But after that, it's back to, you know, the same old. But genuinely now, I'm the happiest that I've ever been. And that's why I really do call my fiance my saving. Because if it wasn't for him, I really don't know where I'd be right now. He's helping me in ways I never thought anyone would ever try helping me.
Yeah. I'm so happy that you found this one person that is there for you 100%. You know, it is life-changing to find that person and to have them on your side. And that's all you want, isn't it? Like right from the beginning, all we want is one person on our side. And for some people, it just never happens. So, yeah, I'm so happy that you found that one person. What does he do for you, this person? You just feel unconditional love?
I feel unconditional love, and I feel like whenever I am sent into an episode where, say, we in an argument and I shut down, he doesn't belittle me. He comes to me and lifts me back up and reminds me that it's all right. And he validates my feelings. I never feel like I'm lesser than anyone. And it's just so great to have him. It really is. I genuinely hope everyone finds their person.
Yeah, I love that so much. I love that so much. What a beautiful man. And what do you want your family to know about what you've gone through? If you could give them a message about what growing up has been like for you.
Growing up for me was, I would say, completely chaotic. I didn't feel as if all my needs were met or my voice was heard. And to this day, it still isn't, you know. I would tell them that, you know, I was a very troubled kid and I did some very awful things to them, but I feel like they need to look at the bigger picture and think about what I was going through and maybe even think to themselves, what could I have done differently that would have maybe helped her? You know, I think I was put in therapy way too late and I was too scared to ask for help. But as a child, your guardians are supposed to see that you need help. You're not supposed to have to ask. And to this day, I feel like, you know, I'm being exiled and my family isn't talking to me for things I did as a 17-year-old and earlier. You know, like, I haven't had any access to them and I feel like I'm being shunned for something I did as a child that I can't control anymore. The things I've done, I've already did it. I can't take it back. But all I want to do is move forward. And I can't do it by myself if no one else is going to step forth and put in the effort. I'm just really ready to have my family back and just be a whole. But if that's never going to happen, then I completely understand. You know, it's their right, but it doesn't mean it's right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just no understanding for the situation that you have been in. What do you wish could happen for your future? What would you wish for?
A common ground. I really wish I could at least come to a common ground with even one or two of my family members, especially my dad. That's the main one I struggle with on the daily. Because I see other girls with their dads, you know, they're going out and doing things. And I don't even have that with a mom or a dad. And if I could have my dad in my life, I would honestly be so much happier. Because that's the hardest thing to ever put someone through, not having either parent want to be in your life. For stuff that you've been through and just reacted in a really bad way, no matter how much you wish you could take it back, you can't. And I feel like it's being held over my head 24/7.
Yeah. And we have to remember that most of when this happened, you really were a child, you know, and you're only 20 now. And when I listen to what you're saying, you sound just asking for some common ground. It sounds so mature. Like, you sound like you are, I don't know, it just sounds like you know exactly what's happened here now. You can see how it's all gone, and all you want is some understanding. You just want some understanding for what's happened, and you want people to understand exactly how it's been for you. Because, you know, when a kid goes off the rails a bit like that, everybody stands back and goes, oh my gosh, you know, this kid is bad news. And that's all people want to say. They just want to run the kid down. Like, we need to stop and say, what is this child going through? What have they been through? Because no child who is loved and cherished goes off the rails. They just don't. They just don't. It's what's happened to you. So, oh my goodness, your story, you know, it's, I find in my chest, you know, I do want to just cry for you because I totally understand it. And I'm going to tell you, you're so not alone. Like, there are, I reckon, millions of kids, teenagers, early 20s, who have just been through the same experience and being completely abandoned. And I just want to send you so much love, because to me you seem like a beautiful young woman and you've been through hell, and I have so much love and understanding for where you're at right now. If there's somebody listening to this who is a parent of a teen, what would be your main message to them? Is it just that they need to be heard? What is it?
I would say just to open your heart and don't be so crude. Just remember that, you know, they're still growing, and, you know, things they do might hurt you, but you really got to just remember you were there once too. And just to come at an act of kindness. The world needs more kindness than it has right now.
Oh my goodness, that is such a beautiful thing. I love all of that. Bailey, you deserve such a beautiful life. You deserve to be loved and cherished. You deserve to be cared for. You are innately lovable and worthy, and your brain has just been trained your whole life to believe that you're nothing of value. And I think so many people can relate to that, you know, just feeling like they have no value. I think it's time for you to understand that you've been surrounded by people your whole life who've not been able to see your grief, your truth, your potential. They've not given you the love and care that you deserve. They've not heard you. You don't need anybody else's approval in this world. You just need to be beautiful you. And you are unique and amazing. It's just that you don't believe that right now. And yeah, I just hope that you can just really come back to your true beautiful self, you know, like that beautiful human that's inside, and you've got now somebody that really cares for you and loves you. Thank you so much for sharing your story today. I can see how hard it is for you to speak about it, because so many people I have on the podcast, you know, they're 20 years out from this, but you're still so much right in it. And I can see the pain there. So I really appreciate you going through all of that to share your story today.
Thank you so much for having me on here. I just really wanted to say one thing. If there's anyone like me listening, don't give up. You know, I know it's hard. Trust me, I know it's hard, but you only need yourself in this world. If they're not going to care for you, you're not worth being in your life. I can promise you that. You can bring yourself more happiness than anyone can.
Yeah, that is 100% the truth. Thank you so much, Bailey.
Thank you for being on this journey of healing and community with me. If you listen on Apple, I would love it if you could take a moment to post a review for the podcast. It would mean a lot. Check the show notes for all links recommended in this episode. If you're on Instagram, follow me at My Big Love Project, and please share this episode with someone you know needs to hear it. Thank you for joining me. You are such an incredible soul, because you are you. You are unique. Your journey is unique, and you can absolutely change the world with your story. Your time is precious, and I so appreciate you being here. Thanks for joining me. I'll catch you next week.